Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, we're going to talk about biologic tapering and axial spondyloarthritis, what the research says and what it means for patients. In this episode of SpondyCast, sit down with Dr. Marina Magri to explore the latest research on biologic DMARD dose tapering and discontinuation in axial spondyloarthritis. Dr. Magri shares insights from her recent study, including when tapering may be appropriate, the potential risks and benefits, and what patients should know before considering changes to their treatment plan. Our guest, Dr. Marina Magri, is Roland Moskowitz Professor of Rheumatology at Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine, Division Chief of Rheumatology and Director of Spondyloarthritis Research at University Hospitals. After receiving her medical degree from the University of Kashmir, India, Dr. Magri completed an internal medicine residency and fellowship in rheumatology at the Cleveland Clinic. She is an internationally recognized leader in spondyloarthritis, focusing on axial spondyloarthritis and psoriatic arthritis. Her extensive scholarship encompasses extensive peer-reviewed publications and has significantly contributed to advancing the understanding and management of these complex diseases. Her research interests revolve around early diagnosis and effective management of axial spondyloarthritis, with an emphasis on reducing delays in diagnosis and addressing associated comorbidities and optimizing treatment strategies for patients with spondyloarthritis. Dr. Magri, thank you very much for joining us. How are you today?
Oh, thank you so much for, you know, giving me this opportunity. I'm doing pretty good.
Good. So I would love it if you could share just a little bit about yourself and what brought you to your current work in axial spondyloarthritis.
So, you know, I moved to Cleveland in 1994 as an intern from London. I was a house officer in England, and I've been in Cleveland for last more than 30 years now. And I graduated from my fellowship, I started working at Metro Health Hospital, which is our public hospital here in Cleveland. And one of my colleagues, Dr. Khan, who happens to be both a patient and an expert in axial spondyloarthritis,
yes.
I worked alongside him and, you know, got an opportunity to see a lot of patients who came from different parts of the world. And then I started with developing a registry of these patients, collecting data, and got interested in this research since, you know, these patients are very unique. In the sense, like, you know, this disease is, we still have significant delay in diagnosis. We still have not been able to find very good biomarkers to make an early diagnosis. So the goal was to improve the well-being of these patients and prevent them from having any, you know, long-term complications like fusion of their spine and stuff. So I really enjoyed the subject and working alongside these patients and doing research. And now I am heading the research center at the university hospitals and taking care of a lot of these complex patients.
Yeah, that's amazing. So in terms of your work, you've focused more recently on tapering from biologics.
Yeah, so, you know, I do do both clinical and some translational research. And in terms of clinical research, I, you know, work looking at, you know, various treatment strategies. And then since, you know, biologics treatment, the biologic disease modifying agents kind of been available for now nearly two decades for this disease and have revolutionized the management of axial spondyloarthritis, we have, you know, various different classes of medications available for this. We use in the past TNF inhibitors, which the first-line treatment, but now we have IL-17 inhibitors, we have Janus kinase inhibitors, and they have been very effective in managing the disease. But it's often, you know, these patients, some of our patients have now been using these medications for more than a decade. I saw a patient today who told me who has been on etanercept for nearly 20 years. He's doing great. So these sometimes, you know, commonly posed question to from a patient to me is that they have seen sustained improvement over the years. And do you think it's time now to discontinue the medication? Is it feasible? Is it safe for me to go off of the medications? So this question gets posed a lot, so that kind of piqued my interest to look into this and see what's available in terms of research to tell our patients whether it's time to taper the medication or not. And, you know, we have a lot of guidelines about initiation of treatment, right, about escalation of treatment, but we don't have still a set algorithm about how can we taper these medications.
And so this is where you started doing work around tapering. And tapering is, just for our listeners, so it would be a reduced dosage, but still continuing the medication. Is that right?
That is correct.
So, okay.
Yeah, definitely. That is what it means. It does not mean discontinuing the medication. Because if you look at all the studies that were done where the medications were discontinued, all of them showed that those patients eventually flared. So discontinuation is not an option or any recommendation. If you look at our 2019 Spartan SSA ACR guidelines, it was very clearly stated in those guidelines that discontinuation of medicine is not an option in the patients. But tapering is possible, and that is meaning, you know, we could reduce the dose of the drug or increase the interval between the medications, but not complete discontinuation of the medication.
Interesting. And so the research you've been working on, or in general the research, so can you talk a little bit about how a tapering program would work from that perspective?
You know, in 2022, EULAR and ASAS, which is another international organization, you know, that does research and education about axial spondyloarthritis, they updated their recommendations. So their recommendation was that those patients that have been in sustained remission for at least 6 months, one could consider tapering in those patients. And so then the question is, as I mentioned, is that how do we do this? That's like, how are we going to do it? Obviously, we can't suddenly stop the medication. So we did this, you know, reviewed all the literature and looked at different studies. There was a systematic review published, which they had looked at 8 studies where this tapering was done. And most of those studies were with TNF inhibitors. And what it showed was 5 out of those 8 studies clearly were with TNF inhibitors, and also showed that tapering was a feasible option in patients by reducing the dose. But the downside was these studies had included small number of patients. They were very heterogeneous patient population. So we kind of felt that, you know, one has to take this information with that's not very strongly. We have to clearly weigh pros and cons of what's going to happen. Then there were some, you know, clinical trials that were done in these patients. So these patients were called these trials were called strategy trials, where what they did was they started these patients on full dose medications, got them into low disease activity or remission. And then what they did was then they completely stopped medication and saw what happened. And what they found was about half of these patients actually flared when they went off of the medications. There were a couple of studies that actually looked at not completely withdrawing the medication, but reducing the dose. So let me give you an example. There is a medication that's approved for treatment of axial spondyloarthritis, sertralizumab. So there was a study with sirtuimab, C-optimized study, but normally we use sirtuimab in a dose of 200 milligrams every 2 weeks. So what they did is they took half patients where they gave sirtuimab at a standard dose of about 200 milligrams every 2 weeks, but then half of the patients got 200 milligrams every 4 weeks. So it's about a 50% reduction in the dose. And what they found was, after several months, that there was not a big significant difference in the two groups in terms of staying in low disease activity or having flares. So suggesting that this may be an option in patients who have achieved low disease activity or remission. Similarly, there was another study with another medication which also did exactly the same way. It's called a go-back study with another medication called golimumab, where they normally we give golimumab every 4 weeks and they increase the interval to every 8 weeks. And similarly, they found that there was not a big difference in terms of flares between the two doses. Now, it sounds kind of very simple that, one could do this, but I want to make it very clear that our patients are very unique. Every patient is different. So we really don't have like an algorithm that we can apply to all or say one size fits all. As a clinician, I think it has to be a decision between the patient and his doctor. Then the pros and cons have to be weighed. A lot of other factors have to be taken into account before one decides to go for tapering of the medication. Because one thing we have to keep in mind is also that if the disease flares, and sometimes it's very difficult to get back to the original level of low disease activity. So that is something one has to keep in mind. I always tell my patients, I said, medicine is like an art. So we have to work with the patient, and they have to understand the possibilities that can happen and then make the decision accordingly.
So what would indicate remission status or low disease activity?
So that's an interesting, very interesting question. We don't have yet a target that we say the patient is in remission. We have different things we watch for. Like at one of the recommendations is if you put the patients in low disease activity, calculate their score called SDAS. And if the SDAS score is less than 1.3 for a sustained period of time, say 6 months or more, we could say this patient is in remission. But we are quite not sure if that is the right target for our patients. However, when I say, remission, what I'm looking into is both the patient's and the physician's perception of their disease. At times, there's a discordance between the patient's and a physician's perception of how their disease activity is. Both parties should feel that the patient's disease activity is low. The patient should tell us that I feel good. I don't feel any symptoms. I saw a patient today, interestingly, 20 years on Enbrel, and said he feels great. He has no symptoms at all. He says no pain, no fatigue, no limitations in any activities. So from his standpoint, he was in remission. So as a physician, I, examine the patient. I would check some blood markers for inflammation and assess my assessment, in terms of their musculoskeletal activity, overall disease activity. And if I feel exactly I concur with what my patient is saying, that's a very, yes, that this patient we may be able to taper. So we also need to pay attention to, how long has this patient been feeling like this? If somebody is feeling like that for 6 months and we then decide, okay, we're going to taper, I think 6 months is too short of a duration. I feel we need studies where we need to have a patient, a longer duration feeling like that before we decide to, taper medications. And then pay also attention, what medications have they taken in the past? What has been the response to those medications and how they have responded to each one of them? And then make a decision.
Yeah, I could see 6 months not being a long enough time.
Definitely.
I think, I mean, seasonally, right? Even just in different geographies, I think a lot of us experience symptoms differently throughout the multiple seasons in the year. That's interesting. Is there any active research being done on the timeline of remission?
As I mentioned, ASAS and EULAR had recommended that to be in a remission for 6 months. I think we need more studies where patients have been in a longer duration of remission and then seen, because they may do better actually, because that is what I feel is needed. That because most of these studies, the duration they have been in clinical remission is variable. So longer you stay in clinical remission, the better the outcome, better chances that you may be able to taper the medication to a
Okay.
lower dose.
And so, in terms of risks and tapering, is it at that 6 month mark, or where the decisions are being made for different patients? What's the what's the likelihood of the flare when they get
So,
hurt?
there was a study, it was done in actually a clinical prospective study that was done in Denmark. And they were using the same, the disease activity and guiding how to stepwise taper medications to discontinuation. And what they found was that half of the patients who experienced flares while tapering were on, they had either gone down below one third of the standard dose of the medication. And nearly half of those patients who successfully, were tapered and maintained a remission for at least 2 years of follow-up. But the study again showed the discontinuation was not feasible. So I think that has to be kept in mind when tapering, that do not try to go like to very low dose. Like this study clearly showed that as soon as they went to the standard dose below one third, half of these patients flared down.
Wow.
So there's a chance, possibility that we, one may be successful, but maybe only able to reduce the dose by 50%, not more than that.
Interesting. And have they ever, have you ever worked in, or is there any literature on reducing the dosage but not extending the time? So I guess it would be just reducing dosage.
It's the same way. Like what you do is like, let's say, somebody is taking adalimumab, and you normally we give it every 2 weeks. The full doses, the recommended doses that you give, say, let's say 40 milligrams every 2 weeks. And then you said, oh, okay, I'm going to increase the interval. We're going to go 40 every 3 weeks. So that means you're basically reducing. So how it's usually done is like there was one study where they tried to looking at three groups, reducing by 60%, reducing by 50%, and then going down to like, 30% reduction. So whether you increase the interval or whether you decrease the dose, like by it's most likely we have to increase the interval. Some do medications you can reduce the dose, like as I mentioned, sotalizumab. They went like normally it's 200 every 2 weeks. They went 200 every 4 weeks, which is like a 50% reduction in the dose. But that is exactly how it's usually done.
Okay, got it. And then once you have started to taper patients, what is the protocol for follow-up monitoring?
They have to, like, we have to follow them as we follow them, whether they're on standard treatment. So, because these are the ones we want to monitor them very well, so that we any thinking patients is having reactivation of their disease, we need to intervene quickly and go back to your son. So we have to follow them quickly. We have to monitor at each visit. We have to monitor, like, their overall health assessment, how they're doing in general, their disease activity, and make sure there's, they are staying in a low disease activity or in remission. So I wouldn't say that, the monitoring will be any different in terms of intervals when to bring them. Same like any patient who's on a standard treatment.
Interesting. And I'm sure that we as patients would call if things were going south.
That's the first thing I tell my patients is I said, anytime you notice that your symptoms are coming back, please give us a call quickly. We don't want you to wait,
Right.
too long. And clinicians also need to keep in mind some of these predictors where people who were more successfully tapered than those who were not. particularly those patients who had very high markers of inflammation, like their high CRP at the onset, gave us a poor predictor that we would be able to taper them. Patients who did not have a genetic marker, HLA-B27, if they did not have a genetic marker, they were more likely not to be successfully tapered. They even found there was a, difference between men and women. Females are less likely to be tapered. In general, even in terms of looking at response to treatment, females usually respond not as well as men in the beginning. Most studies that have looked at sex-based differences in treatment responses have shown women respond a little later compared to men. And similarly, tapering is not as easy in them. So that has to be kept in mind. Is this patient ready for it or not?
Interesting. I wonder, it's a whole different topic, men and women responding differently, I think is...
Yeah.
I would wonder if it's because of, we do indeed experience more peripheral joint issues. Is that right? For women?
Yes, women tend to have more, the way this disease presents in women is sometimes slightly different than it presents in men. Obviously, women tend to get more neck pain. They will have more, enthesitis where the tendons insert onto the bones. They get more inflammation there, more pain. And that is for sure. But this question is a million-dollar question. Why is the response delayed in women in terms of efficacy response? We don't know whether this is genetic, whether it's driven by hormones, whether women tend to have other reasons for pain, central sensitization. Is that what it is? Because if you look at a lot of the clinical trials that are done with these medications, the percentage of women that are enrolled in these studies is not enough. So is it like clinical trials data? Is there a bias towards women that the data shows this? We still have not been able to, look into that in depth.
Oh, interesting. So tapering and quality of life, this is probably also a million-dollar question, but maybe we have some answers to it. So how does tapering affect the overall quality of life, including function, daily activities, and side effects that you've seen?
So, that the one of the reasons why patients want to taper is because the concern of, adverse events and safety being on a long-term on a medication. That's one of the reasons patients get worried about. There was a study that actually looked at that. It was a meta-analysis that looked at 13 controlled trials. These were trials, four of them were in spondyloarthritis and nine of them were in rheumatoid arthritis. And they were looking at those patients, whether they had serious infections who continued to stay on the same standard dose of the medication or those who tapered. And they found there was no difference in the risk of serious side effects or malignancy or cardiovascular death between the standard dose or the tapered dose. So the concern about this, side effects, I don't think is really there, that staying on this medication long-term is going to give you more adverse events at a standard dose by reducing a dose. But the question is, if patients are doing well and, it's sometimes more practical not to inject themselves frequently and they are able to keep their disease under control, then it makes more sense.
Got it. So if someone was listening and they were interested in potentially tapering and felt like that was an option, how would they approach that with their rheumatologist?
They need to talk to their rheumatologist, tell them exactly how they're feeling, how long have they been on this medication, how are they compared to when they started on the medication, how they've been doing. And then obviously the clinician will ask them a few questions about their, rating their pain, their fatigue, their sleep, overall quality of life, how these patients are feeling, and then seeing how long have they been. They may do some blood work, check their markers of inflammation, make sure the disease is quiescent, that there is no disease activity. And if one of the, in office, we often measure disease activity. We use some certain outcome measures. We use a score called ankylosing spondylitis disease activity score. If the score is less than 1.2, that's very good. That means there's not hardly any disease activity. And then based on that, the clinician and the patient together can decide if they want to de-escalate this therapy, go slowly, gradually come down. But as I mentioned, you don't want to make like big moves all at once. You don't want to immediately say, okay, I'm going to cut your medication down by like, you know, 60%, 70% all in the very beginning. That's not going to work. You want to go slowly, gradually, and then see how things are going.
Awesome. So based on your work and what's out there, what new studies or is there a particular direction you're really excited about when it comes to tapering and decision making?
We don't have like a study. We need a study, like, you know, head-to-head trial. Like we take two groups of people and one of them we will start tapering and another group of people we will, you know, continue. And then we need a big study like that, which is what I feel is going to answer this question much better for us. And so these lots of studies have been done, but I think we need a real world study where we would be able to answer this question better.
And that would be tracking to larger groups over a longer period of time.
Absolutely.
Well, we need more research in all of this, I think.
I need a lot of research in axial spondyloarthritis still, you know. We always feel the need for that, that there's a lot of unanswered questions that we still have to work on.
Yeah, and I think on the patient side, we feel that way too. A lot of days.
A lot of progress has been made, you know. That's what I tell patients, that a significant progress has definitely been made. Think about years when there was no available treatment except NSAIDs. Since then, we have come a great way. Now we have like three different classes of medications, as I mentioned. We even have a, you know, dual inhibitor of IL-17A, IL-17F that got approved last year. We have all of these JAK inhibitors, which are pills. We have multiple TNF inhibitors that are still available for us to use. So significant improvement has been made in this disease, but still there is a lot of more work that needs to be done. And because not all patients respond as well and not all patients end up going into remission.
Right. Anything else I missed before we wrap?
We talked about patient function and quality of life.
Not too much. Do you have thought? I mean, I would love insight there because I know you mentioned that the driver often is getting off the biologic for concern over infection rate or adverse effects, but not necessarily quality of life.
There was, you know, in terms of tapering of these biologics in terms of patients' quality of life and function. Few studies have looked into this, you know, the functional and quality of life measures in these tapering studies. They showed that most studies, they reported similar function and quality of life between the groups. Overall, there was a study that was published that showed mean function and quality of life as was reported by this health assessment questionnaire and other, you know, functional and indexed questionnaires that are available. They did not significantly differ between the two groups, that were on the standard treatment and those that were on the tapered group. So that is good to know. So overall, there was like, you know, these patients, they behave similarly. So it's not that by tapering, their disease got worse. There is a chance the disease may flare, but the two groups were not significantly different. So between the reduced dose and the full dose.
Oh, that's great. I like hearing that. Okay, anything else before we call it a day?
And I just want to remind everyone that this is an individualized approach. It's not like a cookie cutter. Same thing doesn't apply to all patients. Every patient, as I mentioned earlier, is unique. We still have a lot of paucity of data. We don't have a lot of data comparing different treatment strategies to where we could get like a, you know, flare-free survival. So we definitely need future studies where we would compare one strategy to another and come up at which would be the best strategy. And then consensus for optimal tapering, that's very important. That's where we don't, you know, have that. And I still feel that 6 months being in remission may not be enough time to start experimenting with tapering. I think I feel the patient at least has to be in remission for more than a year or two.
Oh, wow. So that much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's too early to say. That's why I said we don't have studies that have looked into that. But I personally feel that the chances of success are much more if the patient has, whose disease is quiescent for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a bumpy road inside a couple of years. Well, on that note, thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. Look forward to hearing feedback from our guests on whether or not they have tried tapering. Would be really interesting to hear from people if they've got questions. And I imagine we'll be seeing you again, hopefully, when there's more research coming out.
Thank you so much for having me today. And definitely, I will keep you guys updated if something new comes up.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Magri. SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.